This is General Tommy Franks about to speak, the commanding officer.
Let me begin by offering my condolences to the families, loved ones, friends of those lost and wounded thus far in Operation Iraqi Freedom. You know, we honor their service by our resolve, our commitment, our dedication to accomplish the objectives that Secretary talked about a couple days ago, as did I. Well, we're in our fifth day of combat operations of Iraqi Freedom. Our forces are operating throughout Iraq, on the ground and in the air. United Kingdom and American Marine Forces are in the southern oil fields as we speak, protecting Iraqis' future. Our air forces continue to strike regime command and control and military formations virtually all over the country with precision munitions and precision application of those munitions. Our special operations forces from the United Kingdom, the U.S., Australia, are conducting direct action and strategic reconnaissance operations across the country. And major land combat formations continue to move as you have seen them move over the last 3 or 4 days. Progress toward our objectives has been rapid and in some cases dramatic. Demining operations have cleared about half of the channel up to Umm Qasr. A number of humanitarian assistance ships are loaded and will begin to deliver needed humanitarian assistance, food, water, medicine, to Iraqis within the next few days. Our forces have met sporadic resistance in a number of places on the battlefield. But as our troops fight, even in isolated areas, there will be casualties. There have been casualties because from the perspective of the fighting man on the ground, even an isolated set of combat situations represents violence which he must see face to face. As you know, our forces have been moving rapidly. We've intentionally bypassed enemy formations to include paramilitary and the Fedayeen. And so you can expect that our cleanup operations are going to be ongoing across the days in the future. We know that the Fedayeen has, in fact, put himself in a position to mill about, to create difficulties in rear areas, and I can assure you that contact with those forces is not unexpected. I've asked Brigadier General Vince Brooks to join me again this evening and to provide some visuals for you. Vince?
Thank you, sir, and good afternoon again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to begin by just giving you an update on some of the activities over the last several days and show you some images of some of the initial strikes that we've had against forces throughout central and eastern Iraq primarily and the effect that we're having on those combat systems. I'll talk several times to the graphics today, and if you'll bear with me while I point at some things, you should be able to see it very clearly. Let's go ahead and bring up the first set of weapon system videos, please. What we're going to show you is a series of attacks. All of these are done from the air. They're all precision engagements with precision-guided munitions against armored formations, against command post bunkers, and against other things that you'll see, like aircraft that have been moved into strange places. This first one is a MiG, a fighter jet, that was towed away from the Al-Asad airfield, and was hidden in a revetted area. So you'll see that being struck on the ground. Go ahead and roll the tape, please. We found a number of these aircraft in a variety of places, including in some cases near cemeteries. The second image is an airfield command bunker complex in eastern Iraq. Go ahead and roll the tape. As I mentioned, we're also attacking combat systems that are in defensive and revetted positions. The next one is an armored personnel carrier that we'll bring up and show in just a moment. And this armored personnel carrier is in a defensive position in central Iraq. Next, there's an image of a tank in a similar position in central Iraq. And finally, one last combat vehicle, a tank in this case again, in central Iraq.
The general showing video of airstrikes. Not really great radio, but there you are.
General Frank spoke to you a few days ago about the effort we go through to do precision engagement in all we do. First, to be very precise about what it is we're targeting, how we choose to target it, and also to minimize the effects on things we don't intend to attack. I'm going to show you a series of before and after images from different regime targets that have been attacked over the last several days, just to demonstrate the nature of that effectiveness and let you see it for yourself. Let's bring up the first image, please. This is a complex for the Special Security Organization, well known as the enforcement arm of the regime. You can see the compound is outlined on the screen, and the portion to be attacked is on the lower left side. And we'll show that before and after and then a split view so that you can get oriented to it. And I will tell you that the next image, the post-strike, has been rotated. Let's go ahead and show the next, please, post-strike. It's rotated about 90 degrees, but you can see where the attacks occurred with effectiveness at each of the blue arrows, and only those buildings have been affected. Everything around the outside of the camp is unaffected. Even the walls of the compound are not affected. And the split, please. Before, pre-strike, and after. Let me give you another example. The Iraqi Intelligence Service, the arm that ties to terrorism throughout the world and conducts intelligence operations abroad. This complex is in the center of the screen, and you'll see a post-strike image here in just a moment. Let's bring it up. Again, the surrounding area is intact, and only those buildings that were targeted have been destroyed. Another example. The Palace Guard, part of the regime's protective structure. This is a barracks and office complex. It was attacked by precision-guided munitions. Let's show the post-strike, please. Each one of those blue arrows represents a different weapon that was delivered against the target set. And different from the old days, we don't bring multiple aircraft in. We may send a specific missile or a specific guided weapon system against each one of those points to achieve the desired effect. and the split. Our attacks, particularly in the Baghdad area and other built-up areas against regime targets, continue to be very effective, and we remain committed to minimizing the potential effects on the people of Iraq and also the infrastructure. Let me now give you an update on some additional actions. General Franks mentioned that coalition special operations forces continue to conduct numerous missions throughout Iraq. They're actively hunting for weapons of mass destruction and also looking for ballistic missile systems. And they're on track, and they're doing exactly what they need to be doing at this point. On the next image, we'll show a map just to give you a highlight of where some of our recent operational activity has been. Each one of these pointers shows where the key highlights are. First, the land component did continue to expand its territory throughout Iraq, and that included a continued advance beyond An-Nasiriyah and also an aviation attack against Republican Guard forces near Baghdad. And during that attack, there was an attack helicopter downed. All the other helicopters involved in the mission did accomplish the mission and returned safely to base. Land component also secured Basra Airport, all of the Rumaila oil field, and an ammunition storage area near An-Najaf. The pointers show where those key activities are. Okay, change to the next image, please. This is a video that was filmed as we were doing mine countermine operations in the Khor Abdullah to try to open the way to Umm Qasr, make it possible for humanitarian supplies and other needed things to go in. This is a helicopter towing a mine sled. We do anticipate that there may have been mines laid. No confirmation of that as we continue to go. It's a very deliberate process. And the map shows where we've achieved at this point in time. Go ahead and bring the map up, please. The area that should be involved is down to the south of Basra at the mouth of the Khor Abdullah. We've got the wrong image up here. All right, bring up the next image, please. One of the things we've done throughout, I mentioned a few days ago, an important line for us is using information and as much as possible communicating with the Iraqi people and Iraqi military forces and informing them with information that indeed will save their lives and has already on a number of occasions. I want to show you a few of the leaflets that we've used and tell you that at this point in time we've already released over 28 million leaflets. And that accounts for roughly 5 million more than all of which were dropped in Desert Storm. Each one of them has a different theme. It's targeted to specific areas, whether it is to a unit or to the population. In this particular case, it's a warning to units that they should abandon their equipment or the equipment would be destroyed. And we certainly saw that in the first few days. Next, please. We also emphasize to them that their future is tied to their economy and that they should not do things like dump oil with the anticipation that some of the oil fields and also the oil terminals might have been damaged. This we communicated to the Iraqi people. They should not squander their future by way of dumping oil in waterways. The next one, please. Capitulation instructions and how to signal to us that they're ready for us not to attack and as we arrive to either surrender or capitulate. This is a graphic image. It joined with radio broadcast that gave very specific information on how to do that so we did not have a problem. And that has not been a problem at this point. Bring up the next image, please. As you know, we conducted initial operations to secure the Rumaila oil fields and the terminals that were inside of the North Arabian Gulf, as well as the Al-Faw terminal. Those operations were successful, but indeed there were some examples of the regime having set demolitions on wellheads and blowing them. Yesterday, the assessment team that needs to go in and determine what work needs to be done was able to enter into Iraq, do an assessment of the oil field, and has already shut down a gas oil separation plant, and that turned one of the fires off by itself. So we're down at this point to only 7 fires out of an oil field that has 500 wellheads. Again, a very, very important story for the future of Iraq. That's all we have to brief it this evening, and I'll turn it back over to General Franks. Sir?
Be pleased to take your question, please.
Thank you, sir. Sure, Stephanopoulos, ABC. We just saw from General Brooks some of the 28 million leaflets you dropped, and this was an unprecedented psychological operation. Given all that, why do you think there hasn't been more mass surrender? Can you update us on the status of any negotiations? And do you think now that some Iraqi commanders who may have led you to believe they would surrender were engaged in psychological operations of their own?
I wouldn't speculate on the letter, George. I would say that if you think about the content of that message, it talks about how to surrender. And we've been delivering these leaflets over a prolonged period of time. And as I think we've said perhaps from this podium before, a great many people simply laid down their weapons and walked away from their positions. And John Abizaid mentioned last night that rather than a confined area like we saw inside Kuwait, we have the broad stretch of Iraq before us. And so units which chose to abandon their equipment and so forth and walk away simply have done so. A great many, because of confusion or being undecided, have not done that. I think our enemy prisoner of war count today is in the vicinity of 3,000, and so we'll continue to find and take prisoners as we move through this. And I'm sorry, your second question was?
Well, just on the commanders themselves, why do you think if you're not going to go to their motivation?
Sure.
But have you seen any?
Oh, of course. Of course. As a matter of fact, we are in contact with a number of Iraqi unit leaders as we speak. Please.
General Frank Stomach, CNN. I'm sure you have seen the pictures of the attack helicopter down south of Baghdad on Iraqi television. What can you tell us about the fate of the crew? Were they picked up by another helicopter? Are they missing? What happened in that incident?
Yeah. The fate of the crew is uncertain right now. We characterize that crew of 2 men as missing in action. We're not sure. We know that this particular helicopter was one of between 30 and 40 attack helicopters that we moved into this particular target set. We know that they were very effective in their mission, and we know that one of the networks has been showing that the attack helicopter didn't get back, and so we have a 2-man crew missing right now. Please.
General, 2 nights ago you talked about fighting this war on your own terms.
Right.
Well, isn't the Iraqi opposition, the stubbornness and persistence of it, forcing you in places to fight on their terms where you have far less technological advantage? And might this make you have to pay less regard to the risk of civilian casualties?
I think we're precisely where we were 2 nights ago when I spoke with you. We'll fight this on our terms. And what I mean by that is in a great many places in Iraq, one will find these isolated units and enclaves that I described. And we'll undertake, it isn't that we don't know where they are. And so we'll undertake the sequencing and simultaneity of our operations on a timeline that makes sense to us. I will tell you, in response to the other part of your question, that any time you find, I'll say perhaps criminal behavior of intentionally placing non-combatants in close proximity to military equipment and to military formations and so forth, then you certainly are abusing your people. And this regime has done that, and I think it's been, as a matter of fact, reported by embedded reporters. And so in my view, this platform is not a platform for propaganda. This is a platform for truth. And so what I'll do is I'll try to provide you the best balance I can, and that's what I've asked that our people here do. But to create problems, of course, because we're going to do the best job we can to protect non-combatants in this. It doesn't mean that we're going to be wholly and 100% successful. You know we're not, and I know we're not. but we're going to do our best. Sir.
General Tom Fenton, CBS News.
What has been done to soften up the Republican Guard units that we believe are around Baghdad? How hard have they been hit, and what effect is this having?
They have been hit. They will continue to be hit. Sort of to go to the previous question, at points and places and times that make sense to us, based on which of those units we intend to take under fire at a particular point in time. The effect has been very positive for us, sir. Yes, sir.
Craig Gordon from Newsday. I know we're in a very early stage of this, but I guess the question is beginning to be asked if the commanders have somewhat underestimated the tenacity of some of these irregular units, the Fedayeen and the Special Republican Guard, and how much what we're seeing with some of these rear guard actions is essentially a preview of what the road to Baghdad is going to look like.
Can't predict what the preview will look like, but I guess I would say that that I actually have seen no surprise here, and I think that that our people on the ground have not seen a surprise. There are people in the Iraqi army, whether Special Republican Guard or Fedayeen, who have a lot of allegiance to this regime. And so one can expect, I'll use the term that my boss Don Rumsfeld used a while back when he said, you know, you're going to come across dead enders. And we have come across dead enders, and we've had some terrific firefights with some of these. Not unexpected. I think our people are prepared to fight this war. And as you correctly said, we're 5 days into this.
General.
Ma'am, please.
Is there any update you can give us about the POWs from the maintenance division?
Right. There actually isn't. I think what we know, I'm sure that the Red Cross will be in there with them and reporting very soon. I know that were these prisoners of war we held, then the Red Cross would certainly be in there in order to provide fact and provide accountability and to ensure that they're well cared for. But actually, I can't provide an update. We have seen on television what you have seen, and that is the reporting we have. Sir, please.
My name is Li Baodong from the Xinhua News Agency of China. From the reports of CNN, BBC, people know the Iraqi people are more united than before. For example, the farmers shut down two helicopters. Meanwhile, the Iraqi forces are more strong than expected because the number of casualties of British and American troops is on rise. Do you think the days ahead will be more tough or mean more casualties for America and Britain?
Okay, thank you. I think that anyone in my profession involved in a warfight will expect that we will see casualties in a war. And so, yes, I expect we will see casualties in the days ahead. I actually won't confirm the first part of your statement before you ask the question. I know with some precision how many helicopters have been shot down, and I can assure you they weren't by that those events did not occur as a result of farmers, as you described, and so we have every expectation to continue to place the most sophisticated troops and equipment in the world in the face of this dying regime, and we'll undergo some casualties while we do it. Sir, please.
In the beginning of the war, what so-called coalition forces claimed taking full control of Umm Qasr, then Nasiriyah, and yesterday Basra, and apparently it seems now it's not correct. Are you practicing the strategy of lies and deception, or you just have been trapped by Iraqi army? Where is the truth about the situation in southern Iraq? Please give us some information, static
sure.
information about your location,
sure.
areas under your control.
Right. Actually, there are a great many areas under coalition control. I mentioned in my beginning comments that we have every expectation that some of the paramilitary in the Fedayeen will fight. I said it again just a minute ago. I think what you'll find is the is that the people of Basra will, in the days ahead, be able to have more access to food and more access to water than they have had in decades. I believe within a few days, you'll see that occur in Umm Qasr. I believe that you'll continue to see large numbers of coalition forces move in and around these villages and towns that that you mentioned. And so that's the very best I can give you. I think that there's nothing at all unexpected about what we've seen up to this point. Sir, please.
BBC World Service. He spoke the other day about a mosaic. We're looking at a very small part of Iraq, essentially focusing on southern Iraq. Could you please tell us a little bit more about coalition operations in the west and in the north of the country?
Sure. Without talking about whether these operations, sir, are in the west or are in the north, I will tell you that that in fact United Kingdom and Australian and American special operations forces are about their business from left to right and top to bottom in the west and also in the north, and they have accomplished some wonderful things out there. They're operating in small teams. They're very, very mobile. And they're doing for us just exactly what we want to have them do. Ma'am?
Hello again, General Kelly O'Donnell from NBC. On the subject of weapons of mass destruction, from this podium we've been told that there has been information from detained Iraqis over the last several days. Right. Now that time has passed, can you give us any indication of the quality of that information? And secondly, there are reports that the chemical plant contained no chemicals at El Najd. Can you update us?
Right. I think I'll do my best. I think that we probably have received several handfuls of bits of information over the last 3 or 4 days about potential WMD locations. Some of them, some of those locations are in areas where we have control. Some are we have not yet gone into. I think Secretary Rumsfeld gave the right appreciation yesterday when he said, you know, we were then 4 days, we're now 5 days into this, and we're concerned about taking down this regime and about getting our hands on all these weapons of mass destruction and these technologies. And it's a bit early for us to have an expectation of having found them, and so this is work we call SSE, Sensitive Site Exploitation. And we will do some sensitive site exploitation as we go along, and we'll do other sensitive site exploitation a bit later in the campaign. Best I can do. Sir.
Can you confirm that there were no chemicals found at that
time? Actually, I can't confirm. I will say that it would not surprise me if there were chemicals in the plant, and it would not surprise me if there weren't. And the reason I say that is because I have access to something that, of course, that none of you do, and that is all of these bits of information that that come in. And more times than not, they'll be based on speculation rather than based on firsthand knowledge. I think it was someone mentioned in the past 2 or 3 days, when you get very close to WMD, is when you're able to discuss with the people who have actually been involved in the WMD program. And so we'll wait for the days ahead. Sir, please.
Jim Wilson, Pop, Mechanics Magazine. Have we come away from the aviation operation this morning with the impression that the regime command and control network is more resilient and more robust than we had believed when we went in?
Regime Command and Control Network. I wouldn't put a percentage on it. I will say that that command and control within the country is much less robust than it was 5 days ago. That does not mean that we don't have an expectation that for the foreseeable future, that we will find means to communicate, sometimes by radio, sometimes by wire, sometimes by courier. And so, no, there actually isn't anything unexpected about it. But that's where we are right now. They still do have a means, a somewhat limited means of communication. Sir, please, here.
Adi Raval, ABC News. Sir, there haven't been that many popular uprisings against Saddam Hussein's regime with respect to the Iraqi people. Why do you think that is? Does that show the power and effectiveness of Saddam Hussein in terms of interspersing his more elite troops amongst the civilian population to keep them at bay?
Sure it does. Fear. It's fear. The practice of this regime over a long period of time. It has to do with fear. I mentioned paramilitaries and the Saddam Fedayeen in some of these towns. I answered a question a minute ago about, how can it be that things are not all calm in Basra and Qasr and Nasiriyah and so forth? It has to do with the fact that that fear tactics are still being applied in many of these locations, and that will change over time. Back here, please.
From Radio Television Hong Kong. What is your reaction to Saddam Hussein's TV public address? Well, do you think that it will, say, arise any resistance force from the Iraqi people?
I don't know. I actually didn't see it. Several people talked to me about it, and it was very interesting. No, I won't give an analogy. I started to give a joke analogy, and I don't think I will. Let me say it this way. There are a lot of opinions about that. And so what will be the reaction to that? I think people will believe what they want to believe, and I believe that some people within the country of Iraq and some outside the country will believe that the tape was real, and I believe those there'll be others who will want to believe that the tape was not real. And so I think that in terms of our ongoing military operations, doesn't make any difference. You remember the point we've made several times. This is not about one man. This is about an oppressive regime. So that's my view. Sir, please.
Thank you. Stephen Muir with WCDB out of Boston. Can you talk a little bit about the prisoners of war, the American troops, perhaps some of the training they've received to deal with these types of situations, what they can say, and how they're trained to deal with this mentally?
Right. I think none of us in this room could conceivably put ourselves in a circumstance where we're under the stress and strain that one sees when a prisoner of war. The expectation is that our military members will comport themselves in accordance with their beliefs as people of our country. And I guess I would just say that I have every confidence they will do that. Our people are well trained; they're also highly motivated, and I think that's really important, the highly motivated part. What I am interested in seeing from time to time, or in having some of my staff or subordinate commanders talk to me about, is the embedded reporters and what they're seeing. And what they're experiencing as they're with our young people on this battlefield, and I think all of us in this room would have to agree that the levels of motivation, training, capability, proficiency, as demonstrated by those just like you, seem to be very, very high. And so that's kind of my take on it. Motivation, training, stamina. Tough kids. Sir.
Michael Wolf, New York Magazine. Speaking of the embedded reporters, what do you think has been accomplished message-wise from the embedded program?
Well, I think that's a great question. I really don't know what's been accomplished. I think that the decision to permit the embedding and, in fact, facilitate the embedding of reporters of a great many nations, by the way, Western press, Asian press, press from Arab press from right here. I think what it permits is it permits the viewership and the listenership and the readership of the various countries on this planet to be able to get a sense, to be able to get a take of what's going on this battlefield. I'm a fan of it. I think it was a very good thing to do, and we'll see how it plays out. Sir, please.
About the British soldiers which are missing today, are they now prisoners, and if not, what are you doing to try to help find them?
Actually, I won't talk about Brit potential missing troops any more than I would talk about the specifics of our helicopter pilots or of the youngsters in this maintenance company. I will say, and I've seen speculation in a number of places, that that a coalition like this would take action where action is appropriate to secure the release of people who are taken prisoners. I think you can go back a long, long time in the history of warfare, and you'll find that to be the case. And so we'll just have to wait and see what the days ahead look like. Sir, please.
Delphi News. The sirens have been going off in Kuwait all day. So after the pounding the Iraqi army has gotten, the guys you've been talking about, the several, do we understand that the Iraqi army has the ability to launch counterattacks, missile counterattacks on its neighbors?
Yeah. I mentioned the other night from this podium that we have assessed for a while the possibility that that this regime has ground-to-ground, surface-to-surface missiles. They certainly have not all been destroyed yet, but I can tell you this, the ones that have been shot into neighboring countries, to include two more within the last 24 hours, have been destroyed by Patriot. And so we like the technology, we like the configuration, and we're going to continue the destruction of these systems as we're able to find them. Sir, please.
There are several friendly fires. Friendly fire occurred recently. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea try to reduce the cases? And there are several journalists and reporters dying in the battlefield.
Right.
Do you have any advices for the people still working there? Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Friendly fire incidents. I'm aware of several, and I guess I would have to tell you once again that is not beyond my expectation. That doesn't mean that in command of an organization like this we like it. What it means is that we understand in the nature of war that we're going to find ourselves in circumstances where, because of a tactic or a technique or perhaps a weapon system, maybe because someone's tired, not sure, but we will have these blue-on-blue or friendly fire incidents. We've seen them, and our subordinate commanders work very hard to avoid that, but I suspect in the days ahead that we'll probably see more. And I'm sorry, the second part of your question was?
About a journalist and reporter died.
The journalist. Right. I may be in error, but I'm not aware of a single embedded journalist who has been harmed on this battlefield. I'm not aware of one. Were it possible to keep journalists absolutely safe, I think all of us, you and I, would do that. But the fact is that there are people who will go in harm's way to report the news, and I think, unfortunately, when that happens, in some occasions they will find themselves either in a crossfire, they will find themselves in a position where they're attacked by the enemy, as I believe was the case with a suicide bomber up in northern Iraq here a day or two ago. And so it's not a good thing, but once again, it does not surprise me. Please. Sir, back in the back, please.
Dr. Wilson, the Voice of America. General Franks, the Red Cross in Geneva says it still hasn't received a response from either the coalition or Iraq to its request to interview prisoners of war and get information on them. Are you preparing such a response?
To tell you the truth, I did not know that a response had not been given. Didn't know where we were in the administrative chain on that. But I do feel very strongly, very firmly, that in accordance with Geneva Hague and that we need to move forward as quickly as we can in order to get the Red Cross involved in these situations. I'll assure you this, we'll do our part and we'll take care of the prisoners we hold. Let me go back over here. Sir, please.
Tell us what's going on in Nasiriyah tonight.
Sure. Nasiriyah is, in fact, a crossroads community, and if you look at a map of Iraq, you'll understand what I mean by that. In fact, we have been conducting operations in and around Nasiriyah for, gosh, a couple of days now. Our forces are in there now, and they're going to remain in there. That's the best I can tell you about Nasiriyah. Last question, please.
Sure.
Let's go back here, sir. You in the blue shirt. Thank you.
What have you deduced from, it's Paul Hunter from CBC Television Canada. What have you deduced from the fact that Saddam has still not used chemical weapons against coalition troops? And do you think the greatest risk would be when they converge closer to Baghdad?
I actually think we don't know. There is a school of thought that says as the compression becomes tighter and tighter and tighter, the pressure will be greater and greater to use these weapons. So we don't know. We don't know whether the regime will use these weapons. My encouragement is not to the regime highest leadership. Rather, my encouragement is to the people who will have their fingers on the trigger to use such weapons. We have very carefully said, don't do it. And that's the best I can tell you. We don't know if he will. We don't know when he will. We fully understand that he has the ability to instruct, to demand of his subordinates the use of these weapons. But it would not surprise you that that at this point, even 5 days into this operation, many orders which have been given by this regime have not been obeyed by a great many of the subordinates in his armed forces. Let me just sum up by saying, well, our forces are continuing to move. They're moving in waves and to places that we believe are just exactly right in accordance with a plan that is flexible, designed to be flexible. We know for a fact that the forces on this battlefield are the most capable, certainly the most capable I've ever seen, whether it's by way of technology or training or motivation. Our resolve is great, the morale is good, and as I think we always say, there is no doubt about the outcome. Thank you very much.
General Tommy Franks, the commanding officer of the U.S. Central Command, speaking from at headquarters in Doha, Qatar, began by expressing his condolences to the families of those who have been killed in action, said that progress towards the objective is rapid and dramatic, and he said that they had been encountering sporadic resistance, but continuing to move with a flexible plan. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News of a Central Command briefing from Doha, Qatar.